news, information, opinions, history, and most importantly, always real. This is Rant EM Radio.
Number 13. I'm your host, Rex Watson. This is the Rexplex, where we're talking wrestling for your entertainment, never the other way around. And boy, is China one crazy bitch. You can follow us on Twitter at the Rexplex, like us on Facebook, and join the group page for some fun discussion. Just search the Rexplex. Email us at therexplex@gmail.com. And of course, this program is presented to you by RantEMRadio.com, where you can check it out every Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I am very, very happy and proud to be a part of the Rant EM family. I know I'm not going to hear a response back, but how's everybody doing? It's great to be back. Mardi Gras was crazy here in New Orleans. I was on Bourbon Street, and it was also Lexi V's birthday. If you don't know who Lexi V is, that is my companion. We do everything together, as well as this show. She may make an appearance a little bit later on, but she is currently tending a bar, I guess. Yeah. It was also her birthday, and it was Mardi Gras, so that was very hectic. I had some crazy, crazy things go down with me that I'm not going to go into detail about. And I have a very, very substantial hospital bill to pay now. But that's about it as far as personal things go. I guess I'll just hop right into wrestling, and I guess I'll start from Fastlane, which was a pay-per-view that I did not enjoy. And the opening match, we had Seth Rollins, Kane, and The Big Show defeating Dolph Ziggler, Eric Rowan, and the Hungry Ryback guy. Big Show knocked out Ziggler. They got a punch on Kane in the corner. Kane got the chokeslam on Ziggler and got the win. I'm keeping this short and simple. After the match, the Authority continued to punish Team Cena. Orton came out and made the save. There was an okay pop. I thought Orton would have gotten a bigger pop, which leads to my other thing that was on my mind. This crowd sucked. Orton delivered an RKO to Kane. J&J Security took RKOs. Orton tried to hit a hanging DDT on Rollins, but Big Show came in and pulled Rollins' legs, and they retreated. In our next match, we had Goldust defeating Stardust. Stardust rocking some different attire here than usual. I kind of liked it. It had an old-school feel to it. Maybe I liked it just because I'm a freaking weirdo. Goldust won with a crucifix pin, and the referee didn't actually count to three. The referee looks like the manager of Howdy's from that show Raising Hope. I don't know where this referee came from. He's not too familiar to me. And I have a theory that him and Lillian Garcia were both drunk. And I'll get to that in a second. The referee didn't count to three, but he still called for the bell. Either this was botched or done on purpose. For what ridiculous reason, I have no idea. Backstage after this match, Stardust attacked Goldust and screamed in Dusty Rhodes' face. And our third match, we had the WWE Tag Team Championships on the line, where Cesaro and Kid, the Swinging Pussies, defeated the Usos to become the new Tag Team Champions. Kid pinned Jimmy Uso after a fisherman's neckbreaker with a quick cover, and they are the new Tag Team Champions, Tyson Kidd and Cesaro, which is really cool because I'm a fan of both of these dudes, and I've been fans of them for a long time. So congrats to Tyson Kidd and Cesaro for defeating the Usos. Shame on drunk Lillian Garcia for saying, "Your winners and still the new tag team champions, Tyson Kidd and Cesaro." Up next in the pay-per-view, we had the Triple H and Sting entering confrontation. And exactly what I said a long time ago happened. I hate to toot my own horn. Actually, I don't have a horn here to toot. So, oops, I dropped something. Yeah, whatever. Fuck it. Triple H insulted Sting's role in WCW. He offered Sting a authority role. He offered him toys, DVDs. He said, hey, maybe even a shot in the Hall of Fame. Sting did not say a word. Triple H tried to cheap shot him. Triple H took Sting down, pulled out the sledgehammer. And as I said, when people were asking, why does Sting not have the bat? I said, Sting will not bring out the bat until Triple H brings out the sledgehammer. Sting held the bat to Triple H's throat, which the fear of seeing the baseball bat, I guess, was enough to make Triple H drop the sledgehammer. Sting said he didn't even say it. He demanded it with his actions by pointing the bat at the WrestleMania sign. Triple H said, "You got it," or something along those lines. Then he tried to cheap shot Sting again. Sting countered it with a baseball bat and then hit the Scorpion Death Drop. So we have it confirmed for WrestleMania. Triple H will be taking on the icon, the vigilante, Sting. I mean, we pretty much at this point have most a good idea of what most of the matches for WrestleMania are going to be. Match number 4 for the Divas Championship. Nikki Bella defeated Paige with a roll-up. And Nikki Bella botched a handful of tights spot. How do you botch giving somebody a wedgie when they're letting you do it and their ass is in your face? Nikki botched a handful of tights. I see Paige winning the Divas Championship at WrestleMania. That's something I definitely see happen. For the Intercontinental Championship, Bad News Barrett defeated Ambrose by disqualification when Ambrose refused to stop stomping him. Ambrose then ran off with the IC Championship. We had what looked like the Undertaker's entrance, the coffin, the druids with the torches, and all of that hoopla. The casket opened as it got to the ring, and it was Bray Wyatt who rose up with a huge smile on his face. Bray called out Undertaker for a match at WrestleMania, claiming he'd take the Undertaker's soul. Now, pretty much the scoop and the word on this whole thing is that this match is definitely going to happen, and Undertaker will not appear until the actual match takes place, which means he will not be seen until WrestleMania 31 actually takes place. And I think this is a good thing. And I also have not ruled out the possibility that Taker is working the fans. As we all know about the photo of him at the airport, very gray, frail looking. Wyatt said something to the extent of he's going to rip apart a skeleton at WrestleMania. But I think Undertaker is working us with that picture, and he may actually be in great shape, surprise us, and come back and have a great match with Bray Wyatt. Now, this is I'm being hopeful, but I think that this is a huge possibility. On to the next match, we had for the United States Championship. And this was actually probably my favorite match of the night. Rusev defeated John Cena when Cena was locked in the accolade and was about to break it. Lana got in the ring. I think this was the first time I've ever seen Lana actually make a distraction, cause a distraction to help Rusev win. Rusev then kicked Cena in the balls. Then he kicked him in the head, knocking out Cena. Rusev locked on the accolade, which I believe Cole called the Acolyte. If it wasn't in here, it was on the it was on Raw, but he called it the Acolyte at one point, which made me giggle. And Rusev won, quote, by submission. So Rusev has beat Cena, and this thing is definitely going on to Mania. And I guess this was actually maybe a better match overall, was the main event, where we saw Roman Reigns defeat Daniel Bryan. Reigns countered a knee. I don't even like calling it. It's a running knee. And he countered that the running knee from Bryan to hit the spear and win the match. Reigns will now officially move on to Mania to face Brock Lesnar for the WWE World Heavyweight Championship. A sign of respect was shown after the match. Reigns and Bryan shook hands, showing that they're cool with each other, aka Bryan's putting over Reigns. And that was Fastlane. It's more like a slow bike lane. A drunk person riding in the bike lane. I give this pay-per-view. I didn't like it. I didn't like this pay-per-view. It was a big letdown. At least I went to a 311 concert, so I didn't watch the pay-per-view live, and the 311 concert was fantastic. That might have taken some of the steam out of it for me, but in my opinion, this pay-per-view was pretty shitty. And normally I'm very positive and optimistic about everything, but this pay-per-view sucked. Going on to the next night, Monday. Monday Night Raw. The show opened with Orton in the ring saying he's been out for months, but he has not forgotten what the Authority did to him. He called Rollins into the ring. This brought out Kane, Big Show, Stephanie, and Triple H. Stephanie was offering for Orton to join the Authority. Orton seemed hesitant. Started as the Authority walked away, Orton said he'd meet them backstage for a meeting. And that's when I knew this was going to be a boring Raw. Dolph Ziggler defeated Wade Barrett with a zigzag while R-Truth was on commentary. It looks like this is setting up a multi-person match for the IC Championship. I think we're going to get Ziggler, Wade Barrett, Dean Ambrose, and R-Truth in a four-way, which that's what it looks like this is setting up. I was happy to see the primetime players return, defeating the Ascension after Darren Young caught Victor with the roll-up. So it is official. The Ascension are a joke. Like I said, from their debut when I made the little mockery promo of them, of the prescription. Connor and Victor attacked Young after the match and hit him with the Fall of Man, which is like total elimination, but I think it's more like a partial elimination. Roman Reigns said he has a message for all those who doubted him, but he was interrupted by Daniel Bryan. Bryan pretty much acted like he was talking down to Reigns and was going out on him, but he said, however you put it, it was funny about this when Bryan said, "And when I see you, all the fans boo, and inside I boo, boo, boo." That was entertaining. But Bryan did say, "Sir, you beat me. You were the better man." He congratulates Reigns, putting him over again. For those who didn't see the pay-per-view, of course he has to do it on Raw. Paul Heyman comes out and says that he had his money on Reigns last night, and then any other fight Reigns would win. Heyman then says that Reigns would not win at WrestleMania. Reigns says, Heyman, keep doubting me because doubt only motivates him. And he said some other slang type stuff that was kind of, boy, because they ain't going to believe me anyway. But you best to believe that, or some shit like that. The Usos defeated Cesaro and Tyson Kidd, the Swinging Pussies, via disqualification. There was a ball shot from Natalya to Jimmy Uso, which caused the DQ. Jack Swagger defeated Stardust. Swagger tapped Stardust out with a Patriot Lock after we heard the Goldust music hit, and we got a distraction for Stardust to get caught in the Patriot Lock. Of course you need a distraction at a win at every show. I took note of the commercials that we were seeing. Coca-Cola products, Pepsi, and Dr. Pepper are joining together for the first time to help with education and activity for kids, which is cool and everything, but I was hoping they were joining up to make some kind of new hybrid drink. A charity and everything is awesome, but I really think a Coke, Pepsi, Dr. Pepper just all put their minds together, they can make the soda of the future. Right, man? That's what I was thinking of. Also, there was the Taco Bell commercial of, be a man to do this, blah, 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 be a man. And the whole, all I can think about is, be a man, Hogan. That was just a little side note. The Bella Twins defeated Paige and Emma. Brie Bella hit the Bella Buster on Emma in a squash. Ryback defeated Curtis Axel, two former tag team partners. I found it funny when Ryback said that they were one of the greatest tag teams of all time. Ryback beat Axel with a shell shock, also a squash. I found it hilarious when Axel gave the exact amount of time and up to the second that he is still in the Royal Rumble. And I find that Curtis Axel is actually getting kind of good on the microphone with this weird type of promo style. But yeah, Ryback squashed Axel with a shell shock. As you can see, I'm running through Raw fast because all of you know how much I love to talk about Raw. Yeah, and the final match, Roman Reigns and Daniel Bryan defeated Randy Orton and Seth Rollins. The Authority were at ringside. J&J security tried to interfere. Seth tagged himself in before Orton could hit the rope hanging rope DDT. Big Show was trying to calm down Orton here. Rollins got caught with a Superman punch after Reigns got swiftly rolled out from being curb stomped. Bryan tagged in, hit Rollins with the running knee for the pin and the victory, and they had this little laughing moment together because Bryan tagged himself in like Reigns had did to him weeks prior, and instead of them getting pissed off, they tried to show that, hey, we're buddy-buddy here, once again having Bryan put over Reigns. After the match, Orton stared down Rollins and Reigns and Bryan. Bryan and Reigns leave. Orton looks like he has beef with everyone in the Authority before Orton can do anything to Seth. He RKOs Jamie Noble. Everyone leaves. Confused, Rollins, Kane, and Big Show watch Orton leave, which pretty much sets up, I think we all think this, a Seth Rollins against Orton match at Mania. But what's the point? It was like you cared about Orton's at the beginning of the show, and by the end, you felt like, what the hell are they doing with him? I don't know. I'll go into more discussion in this as more comes to me, but that's the quick rundown of what happened on Raw. What happened in WWE. I'm going to take a quick break right here, and we will be back with more of the Rexplex. Enjoying what you hear so far? Want to hear more of the Rexplex week after week?
send us feedback at therexplex@gmail.com. Tweet us at therexplex. Or join the Facebook group page at www.facebook.com/therexplex. Everybody, welcome back to the Rexplex. Just a quick reminder, make sure you listen to all of the awesome programming we have on the Rant EM Radio Network. You can listen to The Rant every Tuesday night at 8 p.m. with AA and Tony C. Make sure you check out on Wednesdays, Turnbuckle Throwbacks, 9 p.m. with Dave Megapowers and the impact play of Phil Rea. On Thursdays, you can listen to this fine program, The Rexplex, and immediately following this is Rant and Wrestling at 9. On Saturdays, you've got The Wrestling Call-In Show live, 11 p.m. with William Morgan. And on Sundays, you have the What Are You Reading comic book show with Surfer at 5 p.m. Also, Jordan Cobb is there. That's my buddy Jordan Cobb. And now I'm happy to announce, I mean, it's already been announced, but I am welcoming on Mondays That Awful Podcast at 7 and Freaks and Fucking Geeks with my homies Rage and Lee live at 11:15 p.m. Rant EM Radio also does pre and post shows for every pay-per-view, so I just wanted to throw that out there. And now I guess I'm going to get into a little bit of, well, first I wanted to say, I just read a rumor on Reddit, and it's all over social media, that Roman Reigns has failed a wellness test. That is completely untrue. I don't really believe, I don't take anything as gospel that I read on Reddit, especially after rumor that was started from the Mets fan guy who said that Kalisto would have a gay hairdresser gimmick. Are you out of your fucking mind? I'm not taking any of that shit seriously ever again. I'll laugh at it for sure. They claim that Reigns failed a drug test and that was the reason Brock got angry and walked out of Raw. But no, it is no. Brock, for some reason, and we do not know what the exact reason is, Brock did walk out. He stepped out of Raw this week, but there's no real truth to what happened with Lesnar on Monday, and it was not because Reigns failed a wellness test, and unless anything comes out in the future to prove this wrong, I am 100% positive that Reigns did not fail a drug test. Because if he was high, he would be way more creative with his promos. Also, they said it could be rumored that Lesnar's angry that there's dwindling pay-per-view buys. Why the fuck would Lesnar care about that? All Lesnar would care about if there was dwindling paychecks. Alright, I'm going to jump into some indie news, as I always do. We have on March 1st, Ring of Honor presents its next live pay-per-view. It will be the 13th anniversary this Sunday in Las Vegas. It will be held at the Orleans Hotel and Casino in Las Vegas. It'll be a 13th anniversary super event. Starts at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. The match is signed. I'll start from the top and go down. The main event, we have a high-stakes four-corner survival match for the ROH World Championship. This match came about when the number one contenders match ended in a huge schmoz, and there was no determined number one contender. So we will see the Ring of Honor World Heavyweight Champion, Jay Briscoe, as he defends against Unbreakable Michael Elgin, the Sicilian Psychopath Tommaso Ciampa, and Warbeard Hansen. Now, I would kind of like to see Warbeard. I would like to see Hansen win this. I've been really impressed by him lately, and not a lot of people, not everyone is saying they feel him, and some people get him, but I'm unclear. I'm just going to watch this and enjoy it. For the ROH World Television Championship, the champion Jay Lethal with Truth Martini will be defending against Alberto El Patron, a.k.a. Alberto Del Rio. This should be a very interesting match. Another one that should that has caught my attention and drawn me to watch this damn thing live. For the ROH World Tag Team Championships, we will see the champions Red Dragon, Bobby Fish, and Kyle O'Reilly taking on the Young Bucks, Matt and Nick Jackson. I've seen these teams go against each other so many times, I've lost count. But they always do something a little different every match, and they always put on a great match. So this is going to be a treat still. ACH said he wanted to step up to the plate and prove himself. So he is given the chance to do that. And we will see ACH going against the phenomenal AJ Styles, the current IWGP World Heavyweight Champion. It was spoiled that AJ would win the IWGP title because New Japan wanted him going on tour with that belt to represent the promotion, which isn't a bad idea, representing New Japan in America as they're gaining popularity by the week. In a women's match, this looks pretty cool as well. We will see ODB with Mark Briscoe taking on Maria Kanellis with Michael Bennett. In a triple threat tag team match, we'll see The Addiction, Christopher Daniels, and Frankie Kazarian going against The Kingdom, Michael Bennett and Matt Taven going against The Bullet Club of Doc Gallows and Machine Gun Carl Anderson. There we have something that's an interesting tag team triple threat match. Three great teams in there. I mean, some people might say Michael Bennett and Matt Taven aren't so great, but this is intriguing. This is an intriguing match. And lastly, we have Mr. ROH Roderick Strong, who has split from the Decade, taking on the Decade's BJ Whitmer. Also scheduled to appear is Matt Sydal, and I have a slight hunch that we may see Samoa Joe. There will be more on Samoa Joe as I flow through this killer show right here. Next up on what happened in the indies, CZW had its 16. The reason I said 14 is because this event opened with two qualifying matches for the best of the best 14. The show opens, longtime CZW competitor Danny Havoc comes out and says that he is back from injury in a profanity-laced promo. He said he's happy to finally be home again. He introduces his protege, Claxton. He says he will put Claxton through a series of ultra-violent matches over the next 3 months to prove if he can hang. And then Danny Havoc tells Claxton to get the hell out of there and go wipe the snow off of his car because it is a blizzard outside. Danny Havoc also announces that on this event, there will be a bonus ultra-violent match after the tag team main event. In your opening match, we had Bucks Belmar defeating Pepper Parks with Cherry Bomb to qualify for the best of the best 14. And I'll be honest with you, I was really impressed by Bucks Belmar. I haven't seen too much of him. I've heard a lot about him, but he has a very unorthodox style. His whole persona is that he is dirty, disgusting, doesn't give a shit. There was one part in the match where he pulled Pepper Parks' wife, Cherry Bomb, into the ring and started sucking her feet. and it freaked out Pepper Parks. This was actually a pretty good back-and-forth match. But it was better than it exceeded my expectations. Bucks Belmar walked away and qualified for the Best of the Best 14 by defeating Pepper Parks. In the next match, we had Joey Janela defeating former CZW champion Sozio, which was another really good match. There was a lot of crazy spots in this. Two people I've never heard of, Trooper Audubon and Ryan Gallione, came out to distract Sozio, and Janela secured a shocking victory when he defeated Sozio. After this, Sozio was assaulted by his former stablemates, The Front, along with their new enforcer, who I am not familiar with. This was a pretty good match also. I'm just really unfamiliar with who a lot of these guys were. There was an impromptu matchup, with Drew Gulak defeating Alex Colon. Colon came out and said that he can beat anyone, anywhere, anytime. There was a man named Preacher James, who I've been talking about, who was legit injured. They're actually holding a benefit show to raise money for him in Philadelphia. That's about all I know about that right there. But Gulak defeated Alex Colon, which was a decent match. Gulak came with a new fire lit under his ass. We had an ultra-violent rules match following this, where we saw a lot of sloppy shit happening. Stockade against Matt Tremont. Matt Tremont is probably one of the best ultra-violent deathmatch-style wrestlers. I know a lot of people don't really like that style. I am actually one of those people, but I still like it for the kind of car crash aspect, even though that I'm not a... It's far, far from my favorite. I'm more of a pure wrestling fan. Tremont brought weapons. He brought a spool of barbed wire. And in the end, Stockade, I believe, gave him a Death Valley driver or a pile driver or something on the spool of barbed wire. Stockade got an upset victory over Matt Tremont. Tremont demanded a rematch for Deja Vu and a no-rope barbed wire match, and Stockade accepted. Now, right here, we had something that was kind of sad. I read about this. Tim Donks came out to address the crowd. Tim Donks is a great independent wrestler. He really busts his ass. He's been wrestling. He's wrestled as multiple characters in Chikara. He has held many titles in Absolute Intense Wrestling. What happened was Donce came out to address the crowd. It was going to be about his CZW debut, as that most people thought. And he said he wanted to compete in the ECW arena, but he has a tumor on his kidney, and his career is in jeopardy. He may never be able to wrestle again. They said the doctors have told him that one bad fall could possibly kill him. So we had the match that Tim Donce was potentially going to compete in, which was, I just want to say, get well, Tim Donce. I hope nothing but the best happens for Tim Donce, because he is a hard-working indie wrestler and a genuinely good dude. So I hope for the best for Tim Donce. Next match, we had Joe Gacy and defending the CZW Wire Championship against Speedball Mike Bailey. This thing was freaking... This was impressive. This was awesome. Speedball Mike Bailey is a hell of a high flyer. Give him a couple of years, and his name is going to be passed around a lot more. He has some very, very innovative offense. Maybe a little too high-flying, but you see that a lot with young dudes trying to get recognized, get noticed. They do a little bit more high-flying than necessary, and as they get a little bit more under their belt, they seem to tone it down. Good match and everything, but Joe Gacy retained, and he is still the CZW Wired champion. We had a six-man tables elimination match. It was supposed to be the Beaver Boys of John Silver and Alex Reynolds teaming up with Rex Lawless Silver. Alex Reynolds was stranded due to the snowstorm, but luckily Silver had a backup plan, and as the crowd confusingly looked at Silver, he announced his older little brother, Chuck Taylor Silver. The crowd went nuts for Chuck Taylor as the match went on. It was John Silver, Rex Lawless, and Chuck Taylor Silver against Team Tremendous of John Berry and Bill Carr teaming up with Dick Justice. You had to put all three members of the opposing team through tables. First, Dick Justice went through a table from a spear by Rex Lawless. Rex Lawless then went through a table. John Silver went through a table. No, it wasn't John Silver. It was Bill Carr went through a table. It was down to Barry, Silver, and Taylor. Taylor got put through a table. It was down to Silver and Barry, and Silver put Barry through a table, giving the Silver Beaver Boys the win. And this looks like this will actually continue, and I hope Chuck Taylor is involved with this. For the CZW World Championship match, we had Black G's winning against Chris Dickinson. This was a match with no story, horrible structure, several botches, a "this is boring" chant, a boring chant. This match was pretty sloppy and didn't have any storytelling until maybe the very end. Black G's won, and I'm a huge fan of Black G's, have been for a long time, but still your CZW World Champion, Black G's. In the next match, which was intended to be the main event, we had the CZW Tag Team Championships on the line as the champions OI4K went against the Young Bucks. This was an incredible match, some really, really innovative spots, as you expect in a Young Bucks match. And this was also a match that I personally told OI4K I wanted to see, because these teams are on different parts of the country now, most of the time on different continents. And this was a great match to see. This was a dream tag match for me. It was awesome. Some crazy super kick spots, of course. I don't really know how to break this down because I didn't take notes on the match. But in the end, OI4K used the variation on the Young Bucks move, the Spike Pile Driver, Spike Tombstone, except it was kind of a super kick to the back off the top rope into a Tombstone Pile Driver for the win for OI4K, Jake and Dave Crist, who retained the CZW Tag Team Championships. And I was ready for the Triple Threat exclusive match, the ultra-violent match that was promised by Danny Havoc in the beginning when the commentators said, "Thank you for ordering this pay-per-view, folks. We'll see you next time." And the show ended. So, not on the show, Lucky 13 defeated Danny Havoc and Devin Moore, but I have no idea what happened because the stream ended before this even had a chance to take place. Thanks, CZW. All right, show. It was a decent show for a CZW show. I know a lot of people are either love or hate CZW. I'm up and down, but it's still a promotion I follow. On to my favorite indie promotion, PWG. Friday, February 27th, 8 p.m. bell time, Pro Wrestling Guerrilla presents From Out of Nowhere. It'll be at the American Legion Post in Reseda, California. There's a lot of switch-ups on this. A lot of people that we normally see on the PWG cards who are not here. But this is still a card that is heavy and that I look forward to seeing. In a singles match, we will have ACH taking on AR Fox, two of the best high flyers in the world. Speedball Mike Bailey, who I previously mentioned. Now, usually this is a thing with Pro Wrestling Guerrilla. If you see someone on their cards or on their shows That's because they've been spotted by all of the people who work for PWG, scouting the best independent talent in the world and personally flying them out to have the best independent wrestling matches. That is why PWG is my favorite independent promotion. So, as I was saying about Speedball Mike Bailey, he has been called to have a match, his first match in Pro Wrestling Guerrilla, as he will be taking on Biff Busick. We have a singles match. Cedric the Entertaining Alexander will be going against Tommaso, the Sicilian Psychopath Ciampa. In a tag team match, we'll have the Beaver Boys, Alex Reynolds, and John Silver taking on the best friends of Chuck Taylor and Trent. In a singles match, we'll see Chris Hero taking on Drew Gulak. And in another match, this is going to be a hell of a match, one of my favorite wrestlers, Ricochet, will be taking on Matt Sydal. In a tag team challenge match, we'll see the Monster Mafia of Josh Alexander and Ethan Page from Chicago against the Young Bucks, Matt and Nick Jackson. And for the Pro Wrestling Guerrilla World Championship title, the champion, Roderick Strong, will defend against the person who has caught everyone by storm and caught many people off guard, including Kevin Steen, a.k.a. Kevin Owens, Chris Hero, Michael Elgin, and many others, Trevor Lee. Roderick Strong defends against Trevor Lee. This is Pro Wrestling Guerrillas from Out of Nowhere, February 27th in Reseda, California. If you live in that area, you have to go check out PWG. I heard it's an experience like no other, and if that's so, you might as well give it a shot, if you can get in. I heard that's difficult. Now, finally, indie wrestling news. The promotion that I call my home promotion, Wildcat Sports, just 20 days away. Floor seats already are sold out. Wildcat Sports and Entertainment presents Wildcat Strikes Back. After it's been revealed that Socorro has been a traitor and turned and has joined Booker T's Reality of Wrestling crew, Wildcat's going to strike back, and they're going to have former WWE superstar Mason Ryan on their side. Not really sure what role Mason Ryan is going to play in this, but I look forward to being in attendance at this show. Also, the match that I am actually looking forward to the most, I think it's the only match that's currently advertised, you'll be seeing for the Revolution Championship, a triple threat Lucha Rules match, champion Bestia, Say, the son of Damian Say, will be defending against Rey Horus, the son of the original Rey Mysterio, and Purple Haze, one of the coolest dudes I personally know in wrestling. We'll also see the debut of the first two female graduates of Wildcat's Training Center, Katie Forbes and Amaya Jade. These two chicks are badass. These are not divas. These are female wrestlers. This is going to be an awesome show. Also, we can expect to see Wildcat champion Notorious Shane Taylor, who I will soon have on this show, former champion Mike Dell, also Jay Spade, Danny Flamingo, the King of New Orleans himself, Luke Hawks, and the returning Buku Dao after he kicked the shit out of the Ascension on Raw. Be there. It's going to be Friday night, March 20th at the J.D. Mizer Gymnasium in Metairie, Louisiana. Doors open at 6 p.m. Bell time is 7 p.m. Tickets start at $10 and are available now through wildcatsports.com. I will definitely be at this show and definitely be breaking down all the happenings of this event because this is a hell of a lineup. I'm not even sure what most of the matches are, but just the names on this, it's going to really be something special. I'm looking forward to this, and I will have some Wildcat guys on the show coming up soon. That's pretty much it for indie news. Just make sure you support indie wrestling. If there's any indie wrestling around you that is good, go check it out. Even if there's shitty indie wrestling, that's still fun to go to. Yep, that's it for indie wrestling news. Just support indie wrestling. It's good. It's healthy. It's a healthy thing. Support it. And then other news, moving. And Jim Ross said, word on the street is that Lucha Underground is interested in adding some former WWE alums to their roster. Victoria, a.k.a. Lisa Marie Baron, and Tori Wilson are names that have been mentioned to me. Both would be great additions to the roster, quality human beings with ample name, identity, and talent. This info is far from confirmed, but those speaking with me seem somewhat sure that discussions are being held. He also said, hope to see you at Saturday, March 28th in San Jose for a raucous ringside with Jim Ross show at the Rock Bar Theater from 1 to 3, and tickets are moving fast at Ticketweb.com, starting at only $20. Only a very limited number of VIP meet-and-greet tickets are still available, so don't delay if you want the entire Slobber Knocker experience. That was a horrible Jim Ross impression. But yeah, okay, Jim Ross says he thinks Victoria and Tori Wilson could be in Lucha Underground. I do not see Tori Wilson in Lucha Underground. Lucha Underground does use a lot of female talent. They showcase a lot of female talent more than almost any other promotion, or maybe just in a different way. And I like the way that they show their female talent. But I could see Victoria. She's at a restaurant. She's busy. She's not going to be able to spend all that time. But the way they do the big tapings, and I've heard from people at those tapings, it's a lot to digest at once. And I guess you can only bet. I mean, you could see from how things, the speed and the pace of the show, to see over 3 hours of that is probably a lot. Also, as we heard on Raw, the Bushwhackers will be going into the WWE Hall of Fame. A lot of people are not happy about this, just as people aren't too cool with Rikishi going in. I think they have a Hall of Fame worthy career, but not a WWE Hall of Fame worthy career. I think there are many tag teams. I know they want to induct a tag team. There are many other tag teams that definitely deserve that. One being, I would say Demolition. Demolition should go into the Hall of Fame, I would say. The Bushwhackers competed as the Sheepherders. They had a long, long career. They had nearly a 40-year run on the independent circuit that consisted of Luke Williams and Butch Miller. The Sheepherders were actually more than just Luke and Butch. Initially, it had also had Jonathan Boyd and Rip Morgan. But in 2015, we will see Williams and Miller as the Bushwhackers inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame. Now, their WWE run only lasted for about the better part of 6 years. And while there, they were mostly a comedy duo. But previously, they were vicious. They set records for holding tag gold around the world. They're also known as innovators of using barbed wire during their run in Puerto Rico. And here's their actual, the titles they've won. I'm not sure if this record still stands as the most tag team titles won by one particular team. They won the Allied Powers Wrestling Federation Tag Team Championships, the Can-Am Tag Team Championships, and they were the first Can-Am champions, the NWA Florida Tag Team Championships, the NWA U.S. Tag Champs, the Continental Wrestling Association Tag Champs twice, the International All-Stars Tag Team Championships once, the IWA Tag Team Championships once, the Mid-Atlantic Tag Team Championships, the NWA All-Star Championships, Tag Championships, the NWA Pacific Northwest Championships 3 times, the Stampede International Tag Team Champions twice, the UWF Tag Team Champions 2 times, the WWWA Tag Team Champions twice, the WWC Tag Team Champions twice. That's just to name a few. They have a ridiculous record of winning tag team championships around the world, which was completely ignored once they were brought into the WWE.
and they were given this whole Australian thing. And I can't believe they weren't that pissed. Well, they did eat sardines and lick people's heads. So two guys like that clearly don't give a fuck. But I do think they were pissed that they were given a stuffed kangaroo that walked around with them. Because they're from New Zealand, and New Zealanders hate to be compared to Australians. I think they could have given a shit less because they were getting paid so well. Moving on, all know by now, longtime TNA star Samoa Joe has parted ways with TNA. This was first broken on Twitter when Samoa Joe himself posted the following. I have decided to part ways with At Impact Wrestling, my very best of them moving forward, and my eternal thanks to the fans. So there was a lot of speculation about, will he be ever seen wrestling in a ring again? Will WWE be interested in him? Well, apparently Mick Foley has said that to Triple H multiple times. There was actually one incident where Mick Foley, Triple H sent Foley a text, and he said, oh, I'm on my way to the ROH show. And Triple H actually said, oh, I heard that Samoa Joe's one hell of a worker. So there is a favorable view of Samoa Joe in Triple H's eyes. Joe will not be retiring from the ring. Joe later said, the reasons for my departure are varied and a laundry list. I can think of about three different stories they put him in where he was swinging a machete trying to kill people. And some of the stupid face paint. Yeah, I think he had like a penis tattooed. I'm not tattooed. Painted on his face once. I don't care. It was a tribal symbol, but it looked like a penis. Brock Lesnar's sword, I will always call, as I did when he was in UFC, I called him Brock the Cock Lesnar, because his sword on his body looks like a big penis. It's phallic. Joe, yeah, okay, he said he'll be spending the next few days combing through the offers put before me. He's actually a bit surprised and thankful for some of these offers. I have to talk to my dog. Can you please stop nibbling on my finger? Samoa Joe has been officially announced for his first wrestling appearances since announcing his departure. He will be doing some spot shows in New Jersey. I believe Jersey All... does that even still exist? I'm not sure, but he will definitely finally be making his homecoming to the promotion that put Joe on the map when indie promotions were paying out the wahoo hole for him. The former world champion of ROH will return where he made his name, Ring of Honor. A television taping on March 7th, Joe will also be at the Milwaukee and Chicago live events on March 13th and 14th, as well as the annual Supercard of Honor event over WrestleMania weekend. I think that he should actually make some kind of surprise appearance at the pay-per-view this Sunday. We'll just have to wait and see what happens. But speaking of ROH, last year ROH did two shows with New Japan, and I was a huge fan of both of those shows. And it's just been announced that ROH will be again teaming with New Japan. Ring of Honor, New Japan Pro Wrestling will once again be teaming up for a series of shows in 2015. We will see on May 13th the War of the Worlds in Philadelphia, and on 15th and 16th of May we'll see Global Wars in Toronto and Ontario. I know a few friends who will be there. For more information, you can visit ROHWrestling.com. We still don't know which New Japan stars are heading to the U.S. for the tour, but the shows are announced. They have locations and dates as well. So this is something to look forward to. According to sources from the Minneapolis/St. Paul Business Journal, city officials plan to fight for the right to party. No, St. Paul, Minneapolis officials will fight for the right to host WrestleMania 33 at the brand new Minnesota Viking Stadium in 2017. Former WWE Senior Vice President of Live Events Patrick Talty was hired
on as the stadium's general manager, giving the city a distinct edge in a prospective bidding war. The argument is this, and I quote, Minneapolis was home to Vern Gagne's American Wrestling Association from 1960 to 1991, and several professional wrestlers grew up or spent time here, including Shawn Asshole Ripping X-Pac Waltman, Brock the Cock Lesnar, and Jesse the Conspiracy Theorist Ventura, who was Minnesota's governor from 1999 to 2003. I'm sorry I said quotes, because this is not actually what the... Minneapolis has hosted WWE pay-per-events like SummerSlam, but never WrestleMania, which is the Super Bowl of professional wrestling. Philadelphia has been vying for the event for years and intends to also fight for 2017, according to www.philly.com. Go check out www.philly.com. That is about it. I'm going to take one final breakaroo, and then we're going to get into all kinds of things with none other than Lexi V. We'll be right back.
Woo!
Shut it sideways, smack it in the air. Let's move it side to side, smack it in the air. Let's move it side to side, smack it in the air. Show it sideways, smack it, smack
it. What's up? Welcome back to the Retroplex. I am joined at this moment by none other than Lexi V. Lexi V, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm good. How's that Beyonce treating you?
Awesome. Beyonce always treats me awesome. She's fucking Beyonce.
You were the same person, I believe, who didn't want to hang out for a couple minutes longer while we got free admission into the club to see Beyonce and Jay-Z.
I don't like Jay-Z.
But Beyonce was there. She showed up.
I'd rather just see her. He's too much of a handful.
She ended up showing up, too. Colt Cabana told me.
So. I don't... The club was too tiny with too many people, and I would have just gotten claustrophobic, and it wouldn't have been fun.
So how did you enjoy your first ever 311 concert?
It was fantastical. It was awesome. I had a blast. Except for all the douchebags that were fucking surrounding me.
This is so weird. 311 concerts are known for having the friendliest crowd. Like, even if they get really, really hyped or there's mosh pits, if someone falls down, they're picked up. If someone's hurt, there's never fights. I've been to over 30 311 concerts, and I've never seen a fight break out or anything like that happen. And there were two fights? Was there two fights?
There was kind of, I guess. How do I explain this? Okay, so there are these two guys who are bikes who were, like, clearly, like, super wasted before the show. And they kept, like, bumping into people and pushing each other, and it was really irritating because there was a bunch of girls in the front, and we're all, like, super short and whatnot. And so finally this one girl just got fed up with it, and she'd had enough of him, and, like, we pretty much all had enough. So she took off his hat and threw it. Some guy got pissed off and hit up security, and then security got them out. They were going to take the girl, but everyone around was like, nah, take these douchebags, and those douchebags got kicked out.
He was taking liberties.
Right before the show started.
He was taking liberties with some of the girls. He was just grabbing. He was butt-slapping and doing things like, he was way past his limit.
Oh, yeah. Like, he was, like, apparently groping on, like, multiple girls. Apparently me, too. He claimed he grabbed my ass, but he really never did. Thought he was going to hook up with me, so I just grabbed you and started making out with you and solved that problem.
Well, he pointed to you, and he's like, it's a done deal. And I heard him right there, and I'm like, oh.
And why didn't you say anything? You should have been like, that's mine.
Because I don't want to get kicked out of the concert of my favorite band.
First saying that's my girl?
What? It's your first 311 concert. I wanted you, like...
They weren't going to kick me out. I fucking work there.
I'm not going to wait outside for you for an hour for getting in.
They're not going to kick you out either.
And I know better than starting a fight with a belligerent douchebag.
No,
instead of
this is what would have happened. See, you would have been with me, and I'd have been like, yo, that's my dude. And I'd have been like, this is what went down. And they'd have been like, all right, you stay.
So you want to talk about Seth Rollins' dick?
I guess. That's such a weird transition.
So what you think?
Average. That's it. That's the only thing to say about it. It's average.
should Zahara be...
Neither of them should be fired. It wasn't their fault. It's not like... I mean, exes do crazy things, and revenge porn is really awful, and I guess... Can she technically now, like, be sued by both of them?
Yes, that is legal, which... But if... It's true, but come on, we all know it was Seth's fiancé.
I mean, yeah, but I mean, like, couldn't he technically still do it, that, even though he obviously gave her some access to his phone?
Yeah.
So...
Which, that is illegal. That's...
Yeah, it definitely is. It's still illegal. So I don't... But obviously nothing's been said about it. I've tried to stalk people because I'm crazy like that.
Yeah, you know more about this whole thing than I do. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, it's kind of old news now.
Yeah.
And it seems like it's blown over.
Yeah. Apparently nothing's happening to either one of them.
Yeah, Seth Rollins. We thought the interesting storyline would be with Seth Rollins and his now ex-fiance. We thought maybe Zahara would get involved, lead up to... Because the road to WrestleMania is boring, but now there's a new storyline.
I just want to know, like, if she was engaged or not, because apparently, like, not only was he engaged to Layla, but, like, she was supposed to be engaged to, like, some dude in, like a hard, post-hardcore band or whatever, and so I don't really know, but that's the rumor, so I don't know what went down with all that. Like, too bad you don't get to know those juicy details, like, what happens after that. Like, it happened. Let's read the aftermath.
Now, what do you know about Seth Rollins' new feud? Is Seth Rollins still your wrestler boyfriend?
He's still the best-looking one, so I guess.
Even better-looking, or the WWE boyfriend, because no one's better-looking than Boku Dao. Boku Dao.
Boku Dao's just awesome, but he's not, no. No. I'm sorry, no, none of those dudes, I'm sorry, just not my thing. My bad.
Do you know, what's, you got the scoop?
What?
More so than I do.
On what?
Seth Rollins and John Cena, they're talking about
John Cena?
Oh, I'm sorry, I got him confused with a better John. John Stewart.
There we go.
Seth Rollins and John Stewart, do you see, who do you think we have a better chance of seeing at WrestleMania? John Stewart and Seth Rollins one-on-one, or... Seth Rollins and Randy Orton one-on-one.
Probably Randy Orton and Seth Rollins one-on-one.
With Jon Stewart as a special guest referee. Boom!
That'd be pretty sick.
There you go.
That'd be pretty sick. But yeah, the whole thing with that, this basically went down like... Okay, so after this season, Jon Stewart is leaving the Daily Show because he's been on it for like 20 fucking years. And of course you're going to be sick of doing something after 20 years.
He's aged nicely.
Oh, absolutely. He's definitely becoming quite the silver fox, but do say so himself. But apparently, like, so that got canceled. He's canceling, he's leaving the show afterwards. And so, Seth Rollins comes out and he's like, oh, no, now that the Daily Show's done, like, let me just come in and, like, help that shit out and make it better and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, he said, I could even take over Jon Stewart's job as the host of the Daily Show and fix up that piece of garbage. Mm-hmm. Which is, like, it's like me and you, that's, like, one of our shows.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Best source of news ever. Anyways.
Oh, I love the survey they did where they surveyed 100 people who watch Fox News on a regular basis and 100 people who watch The Daily Show on a regular basis. And the intelligence margin was like...
Ridiculous.
It was like longer than the Causeway Bridge.
Well, did you know that 87% of young people get their information from The Daily Show? Like, a comedy show is the number one source, is the number one news source for people, and, like, everyone, like, hates on it. Because,
and that's why Bill O'Reilly always has a frown on his face.
Bill O'Reilly is just a mean-spirited demon, and he just can't forgive himself for something he did a long time ago. And he just needs to deal with his inner peace.
Bill O'Reilly needs to find inner peace.
Yes, he does.
He needs to go to see the Brian Kendrick. Brian Kendrick's going to be wrestling in NXT.
But wait, I didn't tell you what Jon Stewart did.
Oh yeah, let's go back. I'm sorry, I'm going way off track. We're not supposed to be talking about it. Okay.
Okay, so then after, like, Seth Rollins did that whole thing, Jon Stewart made a video and he was like, oh, you think you can do better than me? He's like, you can't do better than me, blah, blah, blah. He's like, I watched the video and, like, you've obviously all seen it on there. But he was really funny. He basically, like, came back and, like, said it. I don't know if he said anything else about it. I know they keep talking about it, but I don't remember if Southern Rollins said anything else interesting after that. I wish I could quote the video, but I watched it and I thought it was funny.
I liked when he said, I'm not sure if it's, you can't decide the which color of... What's your color of hair to
be? Oh, yeah, he's like, can't decide what color your hair is.
He's like, you know, he's like, I can take care of those two goons and J&J security.
Oh, yeah, he's like, even those two goons can't protect you. I forgot about that. That's funny.
So what I've read is they're either maybe have like a little skit with Jon Stewart on Raw or have...
maybe they should just make Jon Stewart a writer.
Or have Rollins...
That'd be cool, right?
On, yeah, that'd be great. And some other, okay, are we done with the Jon Stewart?
I think so. Because, like I said, they keep showing it, but I haven't heard anything else about it, or maybe I just wasn't paying attention, because Raw is too fucking long, and I don't
yeah, how did you, time. What did you think of Raw?
I wasn't even paying attention to it, and then, like,
it lost your interest. I've never lost, we were both on, phones and tablets.
Pretty much from start to finish.
But it was...
It was bad.
It opened up with a good... Orton had a good promo.
That was the only thing that, like, caught my attention. I think that's honestly the only thing I remember watching was watching Randy Orton come back, and that's about it.
But the fucked up thing was, by the end, once you had the Orton teaming up with Rollins against Daniel Bryan and Roman Reigns...
Mm-hmm. I didn't even watch
like,
that.
It was like, you know, I didn't even care anymore. And that was unfair to Orton, because we called him boring...
Forever.
He
comes back and he's actually doing
He comes back and he's entertaining, and then by the end it just seems watered down.
I don't think that's his fault, though. I think it's just, it's too long of a show.
No, it is definitely not his fault, and the show is too long.
Like, can't they cut it back by, like, an hour? Like, a two-hour show would be great. Or, like, even, like, a half hour. Like, 2.5 hours would be fine, too.
Yeah, we've never discussed this, me and you, is no. The reason that it is 3 hours is because of, well, I'm doing the money, it's money.
Well, I understand that, because, I mean, people
USA,
are paying...
USA is paying them.
Yeah, and then you've got people who are paying, like, higher-priced tickets for that, because it's basically the length of a concert, you know? Yeah. So, like, I can understand that, because usually whenever you pay that much money for a concert ticket, like, it's going to be a few hours. But, you know, unless you go to a smaller venue, in which case it's not so much.
Some pretty cool news that former Sami Callihan... long-time indie standout who I've been a fan of, who's now just made his debut as Solomon Crowe. He's got a little bit of a hacker gimmick going on. He helped pull a woman out of an overturned SUV following an accident near the WWE Performance Center. Crowe had just finished training and went to a nearby store when he heard a crash, and he rushed to the scene with another witness. The woman's SUV had jumped a curb and overturned after hitting a tree, and Crowe, along with the other witnesses, had to pry the door open and help remove the woman from the car.
Oh my God, so is he like the new John Cena? Is he going to be the new hero?
Well, Sami Callihan's an actual hero. It's part Solomon Crowe. He is a true hero.
Yeah, but they could use that. And they could be like, oh, look, it's a new hero. But then I'm going to be like, we love Roman Reigns for whatever.
Thank God George Zimmerman wasn't around.
He probably would have just been worse.
They both.
Wait, isn't he in jail again?
He should be.
Right.
They both sat with the victim. Because you remember when he saved, when George Zimmerman tried to save a family in Orlando or whatever?
And then it turned, and they thought he was like nuts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is what Solomon Crowe had to say following. I didn't even think when I saw it. I was wearing sandals. I just took off in a full sprint toward the car. I knew especially if a car is upside down like that, it can catch fire very easily. And whoever was in it, we wanted to get them out. I would hope someone would do the same for me. That's how I think about it. So, shout out to Solomon Crowe for
being
a
nice.
Good deed. Yeah, man, being real about it, being a hero. He was just coming back from training. And now he's on TV, so
cool.
That's some cool shit. AJ pissed off about the treatment of divas.
Yeah.
On Monday's episode of Raw, we saw Paige and Emma lose to the Bella Twins in all of 30 seconds. Paige got an entrance and was made to stand alone in the ring while a 4-minute video package for Sting played. Paige had to stand in the ring there waiting for her match while they played a video package for Sting.
Then, for what? Then like, what was the fucking point of that? What was the point to bring her out and then make her wait?
Then they subsequently go to the match. The match lasts 30 seconds.
That's awful.
Which led to the whole use your voice, give Divas a chance. Fans were outraged. They took to Twitter, voicing their displeasure with the hashtag give Divas a chance. Mm-hmm. And that quickly became a top trending topic. And it stayed there well until the next day. I don't know if it's still hanging around, but the timing of this was odd because Stephanie McMahon had tweeted this in response to the Oscars earlier that day. She said, "Thank you, Patty Arquette, for having the courage to fight for hashtag women's rights on such a great grand platform. Hashtag use your voice." Seeing this, former Divas champion AJ Lee, who was currently out injured.
Is she out injured or is she just out?
That's what I was about to say, really?
I thought she permanently was gone for good. Like, I'm confused here.
Well, AJ posted on Twitter. I thought she was...
Whatever, we'll see, I guess.
Oh, man, this is... AJ said, "Your female wrestlers have record-selling merchandise and have starred in the highest-rated segment of the show several times." Nonetheless, those merchandise and rated segments included AJ herself. Yeah. So a little bit of a...
They got fucked up there.
Yeah, so she kind of gave Stephanie a little Twitter cunt punch and that. AJ said, "And yet they receive a fraction of the wages and screen time of the majority of the male roster. Hashtag use your voice."
Fucking go, AJ. Like, you tell that bitch. You tell her what's up. Like, the more I hear about Stephanie McMahon, like, the more I really just dislike her. Like, she just seems like such a two-faced bitch. I'm sorry.
I now pronounce you Phil and AJ Pipe Bomb. They're just dropping truth nuggets all over the place.
No, Phil and eight pipe bombs.
Phil and eight pipe. Yeah, there you go. After the Give a Divas a Chance hashtag trended, and AJ called out Steph on Twitter for how the Divas are tweeted, Vince McMahon tweeted the following: "We hear you. Keep watching. Hashtag Give Divas a Chance." I highly doubt Vince himself personally.
Oh, fuck no. I bet, like, he had somebody, like, one of his Twitter handles. Like, does Vince McMahon even know how to use Twitter? Like, let's think about that. I'm sure he has Twitter handles.
Well, no, there's an Angry Vince account. Actually, that's a mockery of him.
Actually, can I get that job? Can I be Vince McMahon's personal Twitter handler and just get paid for that? That'd be dope.
Yeah, just say whatever's politically correct and...
and pretend.
And say, "Damn it, damn it, damn it."
Damn it. Why does it say here? "We hear you. Keep watching. Give Divas a chance."
Damn it.
That is so much better.
There's speculation that this shit's an angle between AJ and Stephanie. Why would they do that when we have just 5 weeks until WrestleMania?
Why would she go after her throat like that, though?
Yeah.
Like, let's think about that. Like, why would she go so heavy hard over something? Like, that's actually true. Like, that's, I don't know. Like, why would you use the Oscars as an excuse for that? It's not like, unless you're, like, buddy-buddy with Patricia Arquette for whatever reason. Like, how would you even know that was going to happen?
This is what I think it is. They're trying to be as relevant in pop culture as they possibly can.
While fucking up at the same time?
Well, they said, let's give a shout-out. Okay, you're going to remember all these, too.
Okay.
Let's give a shout-out to our good friend Eminem for winning the Grammy.
Yeah.
Okay, and then they had, what was the other one? They had, Brian Williams, when he made the false statements.
Uh-huh.
And Paul Heyman come out and say, Brian Williams may have said this, but he's not a big... And then they do the Jon Stewart thing once they find out Jon Stewart's leaving.
Yeah, that's
then, then Patricia Arquette does well at the Emmys. Then they give her a nod.
So basically they're trying to be two everywhere at one time.
Yeah, and it's just crappy.
It's just fucking and everything. Because they're trying to be too relevant to many different departments that aren't particularly relevant to them.
When what they really should be worrying about
is themselves.
Their own product.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Like, is that even in their market? Like, let's get real here.
No, Jon Stewart's son is a big wrestling fan.
Well, I feel, okay,
John
Stewart's
a casual fan.
Well, here's my thing. Like, okay, do you really think that the majority of wrestling fans are going to really watch the Oscars? Like, given based on their probable interest? Like, they probably watch, like, what we watch, like Adult Swim and Comedy Central. That's pretty much it.
Yeah.
So, like, we didn't watch the Oscars. Like, do you think that the majority of everybody else did, too? Like, considering that we're kind of in this demographic?
No, I think it's a small fraction.
Exactly. So then, why? I mean, I can understand the music thing because, like, you know, they do use music in there or whatever. They do have, like, guest stars come on. But some of it's a little bit far-fetched. Like, I wouldn't bring it up unless they were actually there at the time. That's just me.
Unless Batista was nominated for Actor of the Year in Guardians of the Galaxy.
Well, that would be different, you know?
Yeah.
Like, that's someone that's, you know, still attached to them. That's actually, that would be actual relevance.
Yeah, I agree.
See?
Yeah, do you think this has anything to do with the, what we're going to end on? I believe, is the CM Punk being sued by Dr. Chris Amon.
I don't really understand that whole thing.
Let me just run through it. Okay, the report. WWE senior ringside physician Dr. Chris Amon filed a defamation lawsuit against CM Punk, real name Phil Brooks, and Colt Cabana, real name Scott Colton, on Thursday in a Chicago court for comments that were made on the Art of Wrestling podcast last November that, quote, repeatedly and falsely impugned the integrity. As a doctor, Dr. Amon is seeking more than $1 million in compensatory damages and an undisclosed amount in punitive damages. Cabana, the real-life best friend of CM Punk, is the host of the Art of Wrestling. The two-part podcast was the first time CM Punk spoke publicly about his abrupt departure from the company and was one of the main reasons for quitting was alleged medical practice. CM Punk claimed the WWE didn't follow proper concussion protocol, rushed him back to the ring following elbow surgery, and misdiagnosed a fatty deposit that allegedly developed into a staph infection. These accusations were directed in part at Dr. Amon. Now, we listened to both of those podcasts,
mm-hmm.
and what was your main take from that?
About what? The medical thing? I never heard that name until now. Like, I mean, like, he never directed it at one specific. He wasn't like, oh, my WWE doctor. He was just like, the doctors at WWE. He made a general statement. Like, he never, like, fully flat out said, this person fucks me over in this way. So, maybe I just don't understand the full definition of slander, or maybe the fact that he just made a generalization, this dude is a head, he took it upon himself personally. I don't personally, like, I'm not a lawyer. I don't really know. However, I think it's a little bit far, it's just a little bit far-fetched in my opinion, but who knows?
I agree. Amon said all the statements Brooks and Colton, both who live in Cook County, made literally, and their implications are false. I thought podcasts...
Wait, what did Colt Cabana say about this? I don't understand. How did he make a statement about it when he was pretty much just sitting there listening, asking questions? And maybe, like, being like, oh, so you felt like blah, 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 blah. That's a simple observation. Like, you can't go after somebody for making an observation based on what somebody else said.
Yeah. Like, fucking... I don't know. I forgot what my example was. But it's, you can't sue Colt. What are you going
to... For what?
What are you going to sue him for? His knee pads? He doesn't...
Poor guy.
The Colt... I mean, the thing is, Punk is going to take care of Colt.
I hope so. I really hope he does.
No, he's going to. And for someone who knows Colt personally, he is, like, such a freaking sweetheart. Yeah, he does not deserve this shit. And all Colt did was gave CM Punk the platform that every single person who had a show was scratching and scraping for to let Punk get that shit off his chest.
And why wouldn't he do it on his best friend's podcast?
Yeah.
Like, come on. Like, he's not going to go to just some any dude who offers him a lot of money. Didn't he do the shit for free anyway?
Yeah.
See? Like, it wasn't even about money. So, I don't get it. Like,
and also...
Does this guy really think that Colt Cabana made, like, a huge lump sum of money off of this, too?
I'm not sure if he was around when Colt was in WWE and they were just treating him like a piece of shit. but it's a lot of it revolves around the lump. The baseball. So apparently, if you watch CM Punk in the Royal Rumble, you don't see a baseball on his pants. You just see a trouser snake. Contrary to the former WWE wrestler's statements, Heyman says he followed proper protocol by directing Brooks to leave the ring after a preliminary diagnosis of a possible concussion and even requested further evaluation and treatment in a training room.
I want to see his papers.
In regards to Colton, who left the WWE in 2009 and hosts a weekly podcast that features interviews with professional wrestlers, the suit alleges he helped Brooks falsely depict Heyman as a lazy and bad doctor by urging listeners to hear the struggle. That is horseshit. Okay, the doctor is saying that Colt Cabana helped CM Punk perpetuate false information by having him on his podcast and by advertising his podcast that he wants people to listen to. There are certain wrestlers out there who have never done a shoot interview or a podcast. But if I had The Undertaker on to do a tell-all interview, you better believe I'm going to promote the fuck out of that.
Oh, hell yeah.
So, what did Colt do wrong again? Fuck you, Dr. Heyman. I don't even want to see it, man.
You know what? How about this? We're going to defame your character right now. Fuck you.
Fuck you, Dr. Heyman. And the thing is, this dude's been on TV. On NXT, when... congratulations also, because I didn't get to do the show on this, but congratulations to my homie Kevin Steen. Now Kevin Owens for capturing the title, and which was a brutal match that told a story like no other. It's a throwback and something I was really enjoyed seeing. But when Sami Zayn hit the Arabian press to the outside, and it appeared as if he hit his head on the entrance ramp, Dr. Heyman was one of the two doctors who rushed out there to help him. Also, he was on Raw twice over the past 2 weeks. So,
are they trying to... Okay, that just sounds like WWE's trying to feed into this, being like, oh, like, the people totally know what this guy's face is, blah, blah, blah. Oh, look, see, he's on TV. It's like, well, you're doing it now, but how about then? Like, what the fuck is that going to matter? Like, how is that going to be for your case? It doesn't matter what happened now, it happens, what matters what happened then. Like, that's what this whole argument's about.
Exactly. And see, what Dr. Heyman says, the statements have damaged his professional reputation. Well, this is what his lawyer said. The statements have damaged his professional reputation and will continue to do so.
How is it damaging his professional reputation? Homie, when he clearly still has a fucking job.
That's what I'm saying. Homie, you were backstage before this. Now you're on TV for some reason that I have no idea.
Dick.
Apparently he's insulted that the fans started chanting Z-Pack anytime he would come out to the ring. Well, you know what? You deserve it, asshole. I don't even care if Punk was completely fabricating that whole story. This is unnecessary. Leave my dude out of this. Like, don't fuck with Colt Cabana.
Like, really, you just seem like a douchebag who's hungry for money and you're just trying to, like, fucking leech off this whole shit.
You're
like,
still employed to the WWE. You're making good money.
So I don't understand how this has damaged your professional reputation, unless you somehow have, like, you practice somewhere else as well, but I highly doubt that. I highly doubt you have your own fucking practice.
So I'll just end on that note. You're not going to beat Punk and Colt, and if you do, Colt better get a lot of help from Punk.
And oh, no, they better sell the fuck out of this. Fuck a million. Like, shit, you're just be a dick.
They should give Colt the Money in the Bank briefcase.
Right.
Let him come back, give him the Money in the Bank briefcase.
Oh, better yet, they should bring Colt... No. They should bring them both back, and they should fight that guy.
Or since Colt Cabana is so good at doing different characters, they should bring him back as Dr. Cabana and have him in a Doctor vs. Doctor match.
Oh, that'd be pretty sick.
But, yeah, my final thoughts on this are basically, fuck you, Dr. Heyman, for... fuck you, Dr. Heyman, for unfairly going after my buddy called Cabana, taking this shit, getting your panties in a Boy Scout quality tied knot.
Wait, I have another thing about this. Sorry about the Z-Pack thing. I was just thinking, Okay, if the fan, okay, are the fans screaming Z-Pac specifically at him, or are they saying it anytime a WWE doctor comes out?
They're saying it anytime a doctor comes out.
Okay, then that's bullshit.
Because they never said his name on the show.
So how do they know that's even him? If they're just going, like, if any doctor comes out, that's not him, and every single fan's like, Z-Pac, 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 then why are all the WWE doctors suing? What, like, why you?
Because the way that CM Punk referred to him, people, when he said, there's the doctor who always pops the lumps in the back and people gather around, I think there was like, oh, that's Dr. Amen who does that. And so, of course, the backstage guys, the locker room knows it. Mm-hmm. And if the locker room knows it, it's going to get out to at least one person who's going to spread it throughout the internet. And that's how they know that that's who he was talking about. Yet, I don't think...
But yet, he still has a fucking job.
Yeah, how is it going to hold up if CM Punk never said his name? And if he did...
And he still has a fucking job, and it's not damaging his professional reputation. Sorry. Unless for whatever reason, like, all these people are like, dude, don't come fucking near me. But, like, I highly doubt that if you're still fucking there. Just saying.
Let's see. There's a video you can watch, and it just...
What did he say about it? Actually, have either of them spoken about this since it happened?
Yeah, well, wait. No, only WWE itself has, as a company, has come out to talk more about it. They said that they have the utmost confidence and ability and the expertise of their world-class physicians, including Dr. Amen. And they pretty much, WWE did a little stupid investigation thing, because Punk had claimed that during the Royal Rumble match, he performed with a purple lump on his back with a baseball. Why do I keep saying this baseball lump? Mm-hmm. It could have been, when you get those baseball figurines, sometimes they come with a really tiny little baseball that comes with the figurines. He could have been talking about a little toy baseball like that.
No, I'm pretty sure it was a real baseball. But, I mean, it's only that big anyway. Baseballs aren't that big, you know?
I got hit in the mouth with a baseball once. It sucked.
Like, softballs are bigger than that shit. Just saying.
Grapefruit. WWE's investigation has shown the following. CM Punk did not discuss this alleged condition with the WWE's physicians, trainers, nor anyone in talent relations. WWE has no medical records documenting this alleged condition. The first time WWE was made aware of the condition was when we received a letter from CM Punk's attorney on August 22nd, 2014, after WWE terminated his contract. You mean on his wedding? There's clear video evidence from the 2014 Royal Rumble which allows all to decide whether there is any appearance of a baseball-sized growth on CM Punk's back.
Okay, if WWE is doing this investigation, why the fuck wouldn't they hide medical records? Like, why wouldn't they just toss that shit aside? Like, let's face it, like, that happens every single day in the medical world.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it just happened to me.
It happened to me, too.
I just got out the hospital, and I wouldn't leave until I could get all my medical records, all my documentation. Mm-hmm. I mean, if I could work that hard to get my own shit in order, you'd think a company this large would...
have their shit together.
Exactly.
Yeah, see, because, like, I know how that goes, too, because, like, when I was younger, I was born in a hospital that no longer exists, and I went to a doctor's office that got moved and was affected by Katrina, so I had to go back and get my medical records, and they had trouble finding it because of those two reasons. So, it happens every day.
Yeah, that's why my medical records were gone, because they were on paper, mm-hmm. and after Katrina, boom, I couldn't find them, so... I guess that's about it for the 13th episode of The Rexplex. Make sure you follow on Twitter at The Rexplex, like us on Facebook, and join the group page. Just go on Facebook and search The Rexplex. You can email us questions, comments, concerns, complaints, and anything else. And make sure you listen to this program every week on rantemradio.com, Thursdays at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. On the Rant EM Radio Network, make sure you listen to The Rant every Tuesday night at 8 p.m. with AA and Tony C. On Wednesdays, you got Turnbuckle Throwbacks at 9 p.m. with the Impact Player Phil Rea and Dave Megapowers. On Thursdays, you get this fine program, The Rex Plex. And following this program at 9, you get Rant and Wrestling on Saturdays, of course, the long-lasting tradition of the Wrestling Call-In Show at 11 p.m. Morgan with Will the Thrill Morgan. William Morgan, my homie. Shouts out to Will. On Sundays, What Are You Reading? Comic Book Show with Surfer and Jordan Cobb. That is at 5 p.m. And we have two new shows on the network. Welcome. Welcome. It's awesome to have these two new shows. On Monday, we have a pop culture podcast called That Awful Podcast at 7. And we have the new show with my two homies, Lee and Rage, Freaks and Fucking Geeks, live at 11:15 p.m. They're also always pre- and post-shows for every pay-per-view. This is all on rantemradio.com. I want to thank everyone for listening to this episode of the Rexplex. Lexi V, thank you for joining me. Any closing words?
For sure. Follow me on Instagram, the Lexi V, T-H-E-L-E-X-I-V.
Woo! And I have been, and I will always be your host, Rex Watson. Stay positive, love your lives, take care of yourselves and someone else. And on that note, I'm going to play you out with a little bit of 311, since those dudes that made my week. Everyone have a great week. Thanks for checking out the Rexplex. I'll see you next week.
No.